Hello, my name is Dave Emery. This is Side 2 of For the Record 502, titled Curveball, and being recorded on March 13th of 2005. We're going to return right back to an article from the Los Angeles Times of March 28th of 2004, talking about Curveball. Now, Curveball is the intelligence moniker applied to an as-yet unidentified Iraqi defector who was the source for the information about the mobile weapons lab that was sort of the crown jewel in the paste tiara that the United States used to justify its invasion of Iraq. It turns out now that basically Curveball, unquote, was not only unreliable, but that he was at all times in the possession of BND, the German Foreign Intelligence Service, and the successor to the Reinhard Gehlen outfit. U.S. intelligence never interviewed him despite repeated attempts to do so. The Germans denied him access, denied the U.S. access, rather, to Curveball, and it wasn't until right about the time or after the invasion that the German intelligence began to say, well, maybe this guy is not reliable. In many of the analyses of the Iraqi invasion or the events following September 11th, I think the analysis itself has been incomplete. Certainly, U.S. imperialism is a fact of life, but the way the German imperialists manipulate the U.S. is very, very interesting indeed. Rather, they use rather like a judo maneuver with the U.S.'s overt hunger, almost lust for petroleum, Iraqi petroleum in particular. It really was a small matter for German intelligence to feed the U.S. what it wanted to hear and to suck them in to a long, costly, and I think ultimately fatal war for the United States with the Muslim populations of the Earth Island. More about Curveball and the way in which the Curveball was used to basically lure the U.S. into the Iraqi invasion by telling the U.S. just what it wanted to hear. Quote, "They began feeding us information," Ritter said. That's Scott Ritter, a former Marine Corps officer and also UN weapons inspector or official. "They began feeding us information," Ritter said. "We got hand-drawn maps, handwritten statements, and other stuff flowing in. At first blush, it looked good, but nothing panned out. Most of it just regurgitated what we'd given them, and the data that was new never checked out." Haider Moussaoui, an INC media liaison in Baghdad, said in a telephone interview Saturday that he could not confirm the meetings that occurred. Asked about INC ties to Curveball, he replied, "I really can't think of such a defector," unquote. U.S. officials say Curveball apparently showed up in Germany in 1998, but it's unclear how he got there. The Times, L.A. Times, parenthetically, was unable to ascertain Curveball's real name or his current location. What is clear is that by 2000, Curveball had provided a vast array of convincing detail about the illicit program he claimed to manage. He outlined how each office was set up and the names on each door. He described how walls were moved to help hide trucks. He identified several dozen fellow team members, even a lowly aide who rented their cars. He provided diagrams showing how stainless steel tanks, pumps, compressors, and other parts were configured on nickel-plated flooring in each truck. UN weapons hunters who returned to Iraq in November 2002 considered the trucks a, quote, high priority, unquote, said a former inspector who helped supervise more than 70 raids for evidence of germ weapons in the 4 months before the war. They checked every site Curveball had identified, as well as others picked up by U.S. intelligence. They tested waistlines in food testing vans, took samples from refrigerator trucks, and searched for truck parts, blueprints, purchase orders, or other evidence in factories, laboratories, and elsewhere. "We didn't find anything," the former inspector said. After Powell's UN speech, inspectors demanded that Baghdad identify every mobile facility it owned. In letters delivered on March 3rd and March 15th, just days before the war started, Iraqi officials handed over detailed descriptions backed by 39 photographs and 4 videotapes of mobile disease analysis labs, mobile military morgues, X-ray trucks, military bakery vans, mobile ice factories, refrigerated drug and food transport trucks, and other special vehicles. Some had stainless steel equipment that appeared similar to the diagrams Powell had shown the UN. After major combat ended, the U.S. forces recovered two suspect trailer trucks in northern Iraq. A CIA report last May 28th concluded that two trucks, quote, probably, unquote, were designed to produce lethal toxins in liquid slurry, and Bush said U.S. forces thus had, quote, found, unquote, Iraq's weapons of mass destruction. But Pentagon analysts warned that the trucks probably produced hydrogen for artillery weather balloons, and the CIA backtracked. It now says there is, quote, no consensus, unquote, on the truck's use. During the summer, Kay's investigators visited Curveball's parents and brother in Baghdad, as well as his former work sites. They determined that he was last in his class at the University of Baghdad, not first as he'd claimed. They learned he had been fired from his job and jailed for embezzlement before he fled Iraq. He was wrong about so much, Kay recalled. Physical descriptions he gave for buildings and sites simply didn't match reality. Things started to fall apart, unquote. Chalabi, now a member of the Iraqi Governing Council, retains strong support in the White House. He was a guest of First Lady Laura Bush at the President's State of the Union address last January, that would have been January of 2004, and his organization still receives several hundred thousand dollars a month from the Pentagon to help collect intelligence in Iraq. By the way, this article is March of 2004. Chalabi says he has been unfairly blamed for the failure to find germ trucks or any other unconventional weapons in Iraq since major combat ended. He blames the CIA instead. Intelligence people are supposed to do a better job for their country, and their government did not do such a good job, he told CBS 60 Minutes in a recent interview. This is a ridiculous situation. INC defectors were always accused of having an axe to grind, he said. So why did the CIA believe them so much? Well, indeed. And vis-a-vis Mr. Chalabi, who may very well have been the person who dredged up Curveball, utilized by German intelligence. Note that Curveball was said to be a relative of one of Chalabi's aides. This article is from the British Guardian of May 26th of 2004. It's titled, Chalabi Boasted of Iranian Spy Link, subtitled, Iraqi Accused by CIA Made Claim in 1997, Says Former Inspectors, by Julian Borger in Washington. It reads in part, Ahmed Chalabi, the Iraqi leader accused by the CIA of passing U.S. secrets to Tehran, claimed to have close links with Iranian intelligence 7 years ago, according to a former U.N. weapons inspector. Scott Ritter, who before the war insisted that Saddam Hussein did not have significant weapon stocks, made the claim to Andrew Coburn, a Washington-based journalist and the author of a biography of the ousted Iraqi dictator. When I met Mr. Chalabi in December of 1997, he had tremendous connections with Iranian intelligence, Mr. Ritter said, according to an article by Mr. Coburn published today in The Guardian. Quote, he said that some of his best intelligence came from the Iranians and offered to set up a meeting for me with the head of Iranian intelligence, unquote. Mr. Chalabi has repeatedly denied passing secrets to the Iranians and has denounced the allegations made by U.S. intelligence officials as a CIA, quote, smear, unquote. He also denied providing false information about weapons of mass destruction to the U.S. Well, again, in an analyzing the Iraqi misadventure, in addition, of course, to the BND and their feeding of misinformation to the U.S. intelligence apparatus, one must also contemplate the possibility of Iran having deliberately baited the U.S. into the Iraqi situation. Of course, the Iraqis had fought a brutal 8-year war against Iran with massive loss of life, and now, after the invasion, the suppressed Shia majority in Iraq are once again flexing their muscles. I would be the last person to try to forecast how the Iraqi situation will ultimately come out, but certainly the Shia are wielding greater power in Iraq than they had before. It may ultimately be that, disclaimers to the contrary notwithstanding, what we may see is an Islamic fundamentalist government in Iraq, albeit perhaps a Shia Islamic fundamentalist government. What we're going to take a look at now concerns the German role vis-a-vis Iran. And again, considering the U.S. misadventure in the Middle East as basically something of a judo move, with German imperialists relying on corporate strength rather than military strength and cunning rather than brute force, basically stealing a march in terms of controlling the Middle East on the U.S. imperialists, who are basically using old-fashioned military adventurism. Again, I suspect the BND's curveball was basically something of a judo move intended to lure the U.S. into a self-destructive and altogether predictable maneuver. What we're going to look at now is something that we've explored at greater length and among other shows, FTR 447 and in particular FTR 450, namely the German genesis of the AQCons, smuggling network, basically people like Karlheinz Schaub and others directly connected to the German nuclear program that evolved from the Third Reich's nuclear program were the seed, so to speak, for the Urenco firm in Europe, which was basically where AQCon got his knowledge and technology, and AQCon appears to have been the pivot point for the distribution of nuclear materials to various third world countries. And again, considering the German and ultimately Third Reich genesis of this, with Karlheinz Schaub being a protege of Dr. Gernot Zippe in charge of nuclear development for the Third Reich, it's interesting once again to contemplate the extent to which the U.S. may be being lured into a trap, and the extent to which ultimately the Muslim populations of the Earth Island may be used as proxy warriors to annihilate Israel and to a considerable extent the U.S. and Britain as well, sort of a let's you and him fight situation. The following story is from the Financial Times of London from March 12th of 2005. This is by Stephen Fiedler. It's headlined, Fresh Clues on Smuggling Network Could Help Lift Lid on Tehran's Secret Nuclear Program. It reads in part, Recent advances in an international investigation into the nuclear smuggling network centered on Abdul Qadir Khan, the Pakistani scientist, have boosted hopes of uncovering the truth about Iran's nuclear program. Mr. Khan has admitted helping the nuclear programs of Iran, Libya, and North Korea over more than 15 years, but there are big gaps in investigators' understanding of what was supplied and to whom. In a critical advance for the investigation, the Malaysian government has allowed experts from the UN's International Atomic Energy Agency access to Bukhari Syed Abu Tahir, the Sri Lankan described by President George W. Bush as the network's chief financial officer. The experts held an initial long interview with Mr. Tahir in February. Western diplomats say further sessions are expected. And skipping down, investigators have known for more than a year that early contacts were made between Iran and the network in 1987. But the significance of the document was that it showed the network offered to provide Iran with the wherewithal to manufacture and cast uranium metal, an ability Iran would need only if building a nuclear weapon. Iran has said it took up only part of the offer, that related to the construction of centrifuges for the enrichment of uranium. Such centrifuges would be useful as part of a nuclear energy program, which Iran says it's pursuing, and a nuclear weapons program, which it says it isn't. Nuclear analysts said the document might have encouraged Pakistan's first public admission this week that the network supplied Iran with centrifuges, ruling out that it had supplied other even more incriminating technologies. The document emerged out of a 1987 meeting in Dubai attended by three Iranian officials, Mr. Tahir and his uncle, a man named Mohammed Farouk, Western diplomats said. As many as three Europeans may have attended, including possibly a German engineer now dead called Heinz Mebus. But again, in For the Record programs 447 and 450, as well as in For the Record 336, we took a look at the German genesis of not only the AQCon network, but the Pakistani, quote, Islamic, unquote, bomb. It was the AQCon network that was the seed for the various countries that Bush has labeled the axis of evil, Iran, Iraq, and North Korea, as well as Libya. And again, the genesis of the AQCon network falls with the lives of people like Karlheinz Schaub, Urenco, and ultimately elements that grew out of the Third Reich's nuclear research program under Dr. Gernot Zippe. That's covered at considerable length and For the Record 395 as well as 447 and 450. I would note that in this time period, the time period in which the Karlheinz Schaub and AQCon axis was being formed, the official for nuclear export technology for the West German government was none other than Alfred Beecher, a former SS scientific officer. So it shouldn't appear all that strange that some of this stuff has taken place. In many programs, I've voiced my opinion that what we're witnessing in the events in and around September 11th and the Iraqi misadventure is a continuation of the events of World War II and with the resolution of those events in favor of the Axis. And I have also voiced my opinion that Al-Qaeda and the Muslim Brotherhood and other elements of the Muslim population of the Earth Island are being utilized as proxy warriors against the U.S., Israel, and Britain, that ultimately the underground Reich will be victorious. I've also voiced my opinion that the Bush element is the primary element in a fifth column inside the United States, which is deliberately subverting the United States in a fashion not unlike the way the fifth column in the French power elite deliberately subverted France in the run-up to and early stages of World War II. What we're going to look at now is a speech, an article about the tape released by Osama bin Laden on the eve of the U.S. presidential election. One of the major features of this is how he notes the way in which the Bush administration is so easily manipulated into taking steps which hurt the United States. And in particular, he notes the role of the Iraqi misadventure in the bankrupting of the U.S. economy. Now, what bin Laden is not talking about in this article, but that is the fact that it's quite correct that the U.S. is being bankrupted and is in the process of being economically destroyed. That economic destruction will lead to its political and military defeat ultimately as well. But something that's crucial is this would not be taking place but for the Bush administration's manic tax-cutting program. The chief people behind that are Karl Rove and Grover Norquist, who are also the driving forces behind the establishment of the Islamic Institute, basically an Islamo-fascist outcropping of the Republican Party's ethnic outreach organization, an historical repository for Nazis, fascists, and other Third Reich and like-minded individuals. This article is from October 29th, the last Friday in October of 2004. It's an article by John Mintz. It's titled Bin Laden Lauds Costs of War to U.S. And note the similarity between Bin Laden's remarks here and the substance of what I've had to say in several broadcasts called Pecunia Nervus Belli, Money is the Sinew of War, that basically the Bush administration is destroying the United States by bankrupting it with its tax cuts. And I will toss the gauntlet down to any member of the listening audience. Name a world leader who has slashed revenues while waging war. You can't do that. In fact, you raise revenues when you're waging war. You don't slash revenues, unless, of course, what you're really trying to do is to lose the war. This article reads, Osama bin Laden boasted that the invasion of Iraq has bogged down the United States in a hopeless war that advances al-Qaeda's recruitment goals and bin Laden's aim of bankrupting the U.S. economy, according to a translation of the full text of the terrorist leader's remarks on a videotape that surfaced last week. Quote, the thinkers and perceptive ones from among the Americans warned Bush before the war about the dangers of invading Iraq, bin Laden said on the tape, according to a U.S. government transcript released yesterday. But the darkness of the black gold, oil, blurred his vision. The war went ahead, the death toll rose, the American economy bled, and Bush became embroiled in the swamps of Iraq that threatened his future. The tape, bin Laden's first videotaped appearance in September 2003, was given to the Qatar-based Al Jazeera television network, which released a 7-minute version Friday. It showed bin Laden saying, among other things, that Americans would be held responsible for electing any president who persecutes Muslims. Yesterday, the network released the entire 18-minute tape, and U.S. officials issued a translation of bin Laden's entire message. On the tape, the Saudi millionaire brags that he is succeeding beyond his dreams in destabilizing the U.S. economy and bankrupting the U.S. government, asserting that President Bush is easily manipulated into taking military and security steps that harm American interests. This last sentence again, because consider this in the context of BND's handling of Curveball. On the tape, the Saudi millionaire brags that he's succeeding beyond his dreams in destabilizing the U.S. economy and bankrupting the U.S. government, asserting that President Bush is easily manipulated into taking military and security steps that harm American interests. The results of the U.S. war in Iraq, he said, have been by the grace of Allah positive and enormous, and have by all standards exceeded all expectations, unquote. The policy of the White House that demands the opening of war fronts to keep busy their various corporations whether they be working in the field of arms or oil or reconstruction, has helped al-Qaeda to achieve these enormous results, bin Laden said. And so it has appeared to some analysts and diplomats that the White House and we are playing as one team toward the economic goals of the United States, even if the intentions differ. This last sentence again. The policy of the White House that demands the opening of war fronts to keep busy their various corporations, whether they be working in the field of arms or oil or reconstruction, has helped al-Qaeda to achieve these enormous results, bin Laden said. And so it has appeared to some analysts and diplomats that the White House and we are playing as one team toward the economic goals of the United States, even if the intentions differ. Bin Laden added, quote, Bush's hands are stained with the blood of all of those killed from both sides, all for the sake of oil and keeping their private companies in business, unquote, referring at one point to the Halliburton Energy Services Company, which Vice President Cheney led before his election. Bin Laden also suggested that the huge sums of money Washington spends on homeland security and the military serve his agenda of weakening the U.S. economy. Quote, all that we have mentioned has made it easy for us to provoke and bait this administration, bin Laden said. Quote, all that we have to do is to send two mujahideen to the farthest point east to raise a piece of cloth on which is written al-Qaeda in order to make the generals race there to cause America to suffer human, economic, and political losses without their achieving for it anything of note other than some benefits for their private companies, unquote. He added, quote, we are continuing this policy in bleeding America to the point of bankruptcy, unquote. He noted remarks by counterterrorism experts that al-Qaeda's expenses in attacking America are a tiny fraction of the cost of Washington's counterterrorism efforts. Quote, every dollar of al-Qaeda defeated $1 million besides the loss of a huge number of jobs. As for the size of the economic deficit, it has reached record astronomical numbers estimated to total more than $1 trillion. Even more dangerous and bitter for America is that the Mujahideen recently forced Bush to resort to emergency funds to continue the fight in Afghanistan and Iraq, which is evidence of the success of the bleed-until-bankruptcy plan, unquote. Well, the point I want to make about that is not only is it what he's saying, basically, is partly in keeping with what I've been saying on the Pecunia Nervous Belli broadcast, is in keeping with what I've been saying in my long, ongoing, and admittedly complex analysis of the events in and around September 11th, which is that not only is this an extension of World War II, but we have been lured into a trap through our own stupidity, materialism, and greed, and that we are going to lose. Barring a serious change, folks, we are going to lose, and that's going to result in the destruction of this society. And it is not something to be relished. But note again that none of what bin Laden is saying here could possibly be taking place were it not for the Bush administration's own folly in cutting taxes. And I believe that the goal is precisely to bankrupt the U.S. That is Bush's goal as well. Consider the following, too. In many broadcasts, we've talked about the Muslim Brotherhood, an Islamic fascist organization that not only spawned the Afghan Mujahideen, but al-Qaeda as well. For the record, programs 455 and 456 go into the Muslim Brotherhood at considerable length, as does 343. Consider the following, and consider the people who are making this standpoint as sort of latter-day Neville Chamberlains. This article appeared in the Washington Post of September 11, 2004. It's reprinted on the Middle East Information Center website. The URL will be listed. This is called In Search of Friends Among the Foes, U.S. Hopes to Work with Diverse Group by John Mintz and Douglas Farah of the Washington Post. Skipping down in this article of the Muslim Brotherhood, the article writes, some federal agents worry that the Muslim Brotherhood has dangerous links to terrorism, but some U.S. diplomats and intelligence officials believe its influence offers an opportunity for political engagement that could help isolate violent jihadists. Quote, it is the preeminent movement in the Muslim world, unquote, said Graham E. Fuller, a former CIA official specializing in the Middle East. It's something we can work with, unquote. Demonizing the Brotherhood, quote, would be foolhardy in the extreme, unquote, he warned. The Brotherhood's history and the challenges it poses to U.S. officials illustrate the complexity of the political front in the campaign against terrorism 3 years after the attacks of September 11, 2001. FBI agents and financial investigators probed the group for terrorist ties and legal violations, while diplomats simultaneously discuss strategies for co-opting at least its moderate wings. In both sectors of the U.S. government, the Brotherhood often remains a mystery. The Brotherhood, or Al-Ikhwan al-Muslimun as it's known in Arabic, is a sprawling and secretive society with followers in more than 70 countries. It is dedicated to creating an Islamic civilization that harks back to the caliphates of the 7th and 8th centuries, one that would segregate women from public life and scorn non-believers. In some nations, Egypt, Algeria, Syria, and Sudan, the Brotherhood has fomented Islamic revolution. In the Palestinian territories, the Brotherhood created the Islamic Resistance Movement, or Hamas, which has become known for its suicide bombings of Israelis. Yet it is also a sophisticated and diverse organization that appeals to many Muslims worldwide and sometimes advocates peaceful persuasion, not violent revolt. Some of its supporters went on to help found Al-Qaeda, while others launched one of the largest college student groups in the United States. For decades, the Brotherhood enjoyed the support of the government of Saudi Arabia and its oil billions, which helped the group expand in the United States. Past and present Muslim Brotherhood supporters make up the U.S. Islamic community's most organized force. They run hundreds of mosques and dozens of businesses engaging in ventures such as real estate, development, and banking. They also helped set up some of the leading American Islamic organizations that defend the rights of Muslims, promote Muslim civic activism, and seek to spread Islam. For years, federal agents paid little heed to the Brotherhood, but after September 11th, they noticed that many leads went back to the Brotherhood. Duh, says Dave. So now they want to look to the Muslim Brotherhood as an ally in the war on terror. Now you know what I suggest. This administration is an underground Reich fifth column and why we're going to lose. I mean, that is just surreal. In any event, before we wrap the broadcast up, please take note of Spitfire CD duplication service that stocks all of the work I've done over the years, both programs and lectures. You can reach them by snail mail at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. Their email address is spitfirelist@hotmail.com. Spitfirelist is one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E-L-I-S-T.com. Visit the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. Several of the most recently recorded For the Record shows are available on both Real Media and MP3. The For the Record section of the Spitfire website has long, written, annotated, article-length descriptions of the For the Record shows. They're usually up within a couple of weeks of the airing of this broadcast. The For the Record website also features the landmark text, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, essential for an understanding of what I call the Underground Reich. And if some of my ruminations sound preposterous, I accept that. Check out For the Record 305's description, which is a substantive excerpt from the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile. Check out the About Paul Manning biography and the book itself. Also links on the Spitfire website to a website maintained by listeners in the Midwest, which feature the declassified U.S. government documents that prove the Bush family's involvement with Nazi industry before, during, and after World War II. Sister station WFMU is archiving the For the Record shows on Real Media and MP3. More recent shows are streaming at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery, one word. Older shows available at a longer URL, linked to both that address and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website as well. Note that WFMU is now podcasting the For the Record shows. So if you have an iPod, contact WFMU. They will download those directly to your iPod. Also on the Spitfire website is a page to click on to support the work that I'm doing. And if you're concerned about the issues I'm presenting, there's no better step you could take than to support the work I'm doing. This wraps up Side 2 of For the Record program number 502, Curveball, being recorded on March 13th of 2005. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.